This episode was recorded in May 2020. If you enjoy this podcast, then subscribe to catch all future episodes.
John Larko, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. I'm enjoying lockdown. It's been crazy. I'm living on Zoom. I'm doing loads of podcasts. I'm doing loads of interviews, speaking to lots of people. But it's a crazy world, but it's been a good time to reflect and maybe take a step back and just really look at myself and, spend some time with the family.
I'm looking at yourself as well there. What's going on with the hair? Is that out of design or is that... It's like mine. I've put about 10 tonne of gel on it to get it down.
Oh, my God. Do you know what, Rob? I ordered clippers. I've tried to order clippers twice and they haven't come. Both times it said there's something wrong with
the shit. You don't say.
And I've sort of just been embracing it, and I'm just thinking, actually, I might just carry on. I might say, I've got some mates doing a caveman challenge where they're growing beards. I can't actually. This is it for me. I can't really grow much of a beard, but it seems to be still growing up top. So I'm just going to embrace that. At 51. I'm going to have that.
What are you up to then? What are you doing apart from lockdown? What are you up to at the moment?
So I'm involved in a football fans app called Pitch Sport. Blundell does the car racing. Johnny Nelson does the boxing side. And I'm doing the football side. And in fact, at 6 o'clock tonight, we're going on Instagram, do it with Paul Schofield. I'm also involved with a company called My Club Group. And they're doing lottery for clubs. So it's much grassroots clubs. So we're doing jumbo screens if they can get that in. Lottery. Someone wins a jackpot every month, so we go and present that. I'm kind of doing crazy stuff, doing 3G pitches, floodlights, involved in sort of helping grassroots clubs really try and raise revenue as much as they can and cost save. So under lockdown it's been mad, it's been crazy. I'm doing all sorts of things that I didn't realize I would be doing, but ordinarily probably property and finance would be the mainstay of what I've been doing. So since I really came out, because the 15-16 season, I was first team coach. And obviously I gave up my slot at Sky stupidly, crazily. But I just thought the chance to go into the dressing room in the Premier League was just too much for me. I spoke to Kondo, the producer, and sort of said, look, I've got this offer. And he said, look, you'd be stupid not to take it. I sort of gave up my seat there. And then obviously... things didn't really work out that well at Palace, although we did get to a cup final, which we narrowly lost and stayed in the Premier League, which is all a bit harsh from my point of view, but sort of really struggled to break back into Sky. So it's been a funny time for me, sort of watching it and seeing the boys doing well. I mean, I'd love to do more TV stuff and, more stuff at TalkSport, but in the meantime, just enjoying real life stuff, Rob.
You miss football? You miss the... when I last talked to you, actually, I think you were there at Palace coaching. Mm. But you did say to me it was proper full-on.
Yeah, I remember doing that interview. I think it was just before we went out training. So I had breakfast and then spoke to you. It was. I mean, we were getting there sort of 7:30, 7:45 in the morning, myself and Keith Millen. And then, we'd sort of have to plan training, see who's fit, get all the lads in, and then obviously Alan Pardew would come in, and then really depending on what he wanted to do, he'd change it or we would do that. So I would then go out and put out, whatever equipment we needed. And then obviously you've got to bring it back in at the end of the day, you've got to train. And really, if anyone dropped out of training, that was the worst one. They sort of throw me in, Pardew, right, John, get in there. And, the lads are just so strong and so quick. That was really demoralising and... yeah, the knees are completely beat up. But, it was such a big learning curve, Rob, going in there. Because I'd been out of that dressing room for a long time. And I'd been working with Sky, doing television, doing all sorts of stuff. And going back into that dressing room and playing environment was just so different. And it was so full on. But I absolutely loved it. I loved it. And it was a shame, really, because at the end of the season, Pards just... said, look, Kevin Keane's available again and we work together and, I need to bring him in. Go and speak to the chairman about a different role. And, I didn't really get convinced that, the roles, that they were talking about, or what the way they were talking really filled me as any kind of confidence. And that's when I just said, like, you know, it doesn't sound like you really want me here. And there is really, you see the same pictures I see. So I ended up leaving it, and I desperately miss it. The day to day with the boys, especially, you know, at the top flight, getting to a cup final was sensational. And just working with the boys like Zaha and players like that day in, day out is a blessing. I mean, Bolasie was phenomenal. So, yeah, I really missed that.
At the same time, I was looking, I feel like a stalker when I do these interviews, because you go through, you know, your Wikipedia and your Twitters and all sorts. But the one thing that came through is, God, you were in a tough school, weren't you, when you first came into that Palace side? There were some blooming big personalities, not just Wright and Bright, but the likes, you know, going on with Southgate, even going forward to Chris Coleman. I mean, some big personalities that it must have been hard at times to sort of stand up to them, if you like.
I often try and explain that to people. That first dressing room was fierce. You say Ian Wright, Andy Gray, Mark Bright, you had Andy Thorne, Eric Young, John Pemberton, Jeff Thomas. That initial squad, it was fierce. And, you know, going and having a couple of beers after games and the way they would talk. I mean, obviously, Alan Pardew was in that squad. And, oh, wow, it was some of the things I saw. But you had to have tough skin. You had to have thick skin. I mean, some of the stick I took off Brighty and Wrighty and the boys. You know, fans often say to me, how did you put up with that? And it was the same in training. You know, I can remember Mark Dennis, you know, in practice. You know, Mark Dennis would be like, you go past me again, son, I'm going to break your legs. And that's training. And you talk about fierce, you know, tough score. And some of the tackles that used to fly around in some of those five-a-sides and patterns of play back then was incredible. And then obviously that next team of Gareth Southgate, Chris Coleman, Richard Shaw, Dean Gordon, Chris Armstrong came into that side, and we did well. Again, that was, in its own way, that was a nicer team to play in, because they were young lads. And then I was slightly older, I'd come back from my injuries. And that was really enjoyable, and Gareth was captain, but that was still a strong side. I mean, you know, obviously people like Gareth and Chris, you know, you couldn't get away with anything. I was watching a game recently, someone sent it to me. We played at Highbury, and I managed to grab a couple. I was playing with George and Darb. I played with Chris Armstrong up front. What a player he was, by the way. You know, Bobby Bowery, Ricky Newman, some of the unsung heroes that were in that squad. But, you know, strong boys, you know, we had a good side. Obviously, Nigel Martin, one of the best goalkeepers, I think, England's seen. He was sensational. And there's been a big conversation recently, just how many of them have gone on to do well. Management, Southgate, Pardew, Coleman, obviously, you know, Brighty and Wrighty, television-wise, and Jeff Thomas with his foundation. You know, so many of those players, you say, were strong characters and big personalities and have gone on to do so well.
How was what was Gareth Southgate like? I mean, he always strikes me as well. He's a thinker, isn't he? And how did he deal with it all? And how did you deal with it?
I don't know. Do you know what, Rob? I can remember 17, myself and Richard Shaw, because whenever you got a chance to go up and train and play with the first team, I used to get proper beaten up because I was cocky and I was quick and I was, you know, they'd think I was trying to take the piss and I would get battered. I really would. And you know, there was times when Richard, I remember we having a chat and just said, I'm not sure I can do this, you know. And I did, I went to a first team game once, Rob, and I was sat in the stand and I was giving this lad called Trevor Aylott so much stick. And Trevor Aylott and a guy called Steve Galloway, and, you know, I'm like, they're rubbish, I should be playing. And, you know, someone obviously must have told them, because come Monday morning, they ushered all the other lads out of the boot room, locked the door and just kicked crap at me. And I was close. I used to, you know, I can't do this. I can't take it. You know, it was a tough, tough school. But, you know,
John, it's not that long ago, but it's just a different world, isn't it?
It's a different era. Gareth was a year younger, and I remember really was thinking about that. But around that 92, 93, we started getting sports science, and the game started changing. You know, you got physios and guys coming from rugby, and they brought in the sports science, and they brought in the, you know, the psychology side of it and the nutrition side of it. So, you know, see people coming in. But whenever we had a nutritionist come in or a psychologist come in or a sports scientist were talking about that stuff. You know, Gareth was always the one who would ask all the questions, who would be more interested. He would take it on board. And he just used everything in his armory to make him, I mean, not the best, most talented player. He had a great engine. He was a tough boy. You know, I've seen Gareth, I mean, I remember that great story. We're coming out the tunnel. That's when we used to share the ground with Wimbledon. So we're coming out the tunnel. They've got Fash and Vinnie Jones is right at the front and he looks at Gareth and he went, "Oi, schoolboy, you're getting that, son." Seriously, 10 minutes later, the game, Gareth was getting stretchered off. His nose is, he just smashed him. You know, Fash, you know, those boys, they were, that team.
Tough lads.
They were, but Fash was a black, he was, you know, they were, they could handle themselves. I mean, you had to watch Jonah. He was, he tried to do me a couple of times off the ball, but you had to know what you're doing and keep your, because they were horrible. But those were tough times because, you know, there was a lot of players. I mean, I can remember going to Millwall with Hurlock and Stevens, Rhino, and, you know, those boys, they weren't playing.
it's like I'm having flashbacks.
I mean, I sometimes think, I mean, I think I was just so confident and cocky back then that I didn't really take it in properly how tough those boys were. But you had to be quick, Rob. You had to be quick just to get away, because if you stood still for long enough, they would take you out. So, you know, Gareth was captain of that side by the time he was 22, I think. And he'd say that was a nice side because he played with Bobby Barry, Ricky Newman in there. Good players. David White, I don't know if you remember him up front with Chris Armstrong. Chris was phenomenal, you know. He was so good, Chris. I mean, I remember, you know, so Alan Smith told me the story. So him and Ron Knowles went to sign him from Millwall. And they said, look, John Griffin, the scout, just died recently, God rest his soul, and great scout. And he said, look, go down there. You can nick Chris Armstrong for about 150, 200 grand. And Ron, with his ego, Ron Knowles, he walked out of there. He paid 1.5 million for it. That's why chairmen shouldn't go and negotiate, but for a million and a half and you know, three, four phenomenal years, and then went to Spurs for 4 million.
Yeah.
Top player, Paul Williams, and you think, yeah, your Dean Gordons, and just, you know, looking at that side, again, you know, Smithy reinvented and rebuilt that side, but with Gareth at the heart of it. And once we got to the semi-final of both the FA Cup and League Cup, and I can remember, I think Swindon were the fourth side. It was us, Swindon, Man United and Liverpool. So, you know, you're watching the FA Cup semi-final draw and you're thinking, please, Swindon, please, Swindon. And I think the other one, I forget who we were in the FA Cup. So in the League Cup, we drew Liverpool, which is home and away. And then in the FA Cup, we got Man United at Villa Park. And I remember that was really the making of Gareth, because Smithy put him sweeper. No, put him center half, and Eddie McGoldrick, I think, played sweeper. So I think Eddie went in sweeper and Gareth went in centre half. And we drew, I think, 0-0 at Anfield and lost 1-0 at Selhurst, or the other way around. But it was a revelation, because everyone watching that game thought, wow, Gareth looks great there. Gareth is amazing. And so I think QPR came in for him, and then at the last minute, Villa came in for him and took him, and he went to play with Ekiaga Magrara at Villa as a centre-back. Yeah. And he never looked back. 55 England caps later, Middlesbrough. You know, just... But that was Gareth. Gareth knew how... You know, he was so intelligent, lovely guy, lovely boy. And just, he knew what his strengths were. He knew what he was good at. He worked his nutrition, his psychology. You know, it's that putting that table together of your training, your nutrition, your sports science, your psychology. And then, you know, you have your legs for your table going into match day and all that kind of stuff that... Gareth would just work at keeping his game simple, uncluttered. And, you know, it's exactly what he's done at England. He's just kept it simple. He's kept it fresh, natural, treated the boys like adults, and he's given them that fire in their belly to want to pull on those England shirts and do well. So, incredible.
You had some amazing managers in your career. Obviously, Steve Coppell, and go to Ron Atkinson, Gordon Strachan, Alan Kerbstreet, Kevin Keegan. Have you got a favourite? Is the one that suited your style or suited your personality?
Do you know what? It's got to be Stevie, really. I think Steve just came in. He was my hero. You know, I love watching Steve Coppell for Man United.
And great player.
When he arrived.
People forget what a great player. He was a great player, yeah, Steve Coppell.
He was a great, great player. And, but he came. He was 28. I was 16. He signed me as a 16-year-old. And he didn't say too much. But, he taught me to come wide, to carry the ball wide, and then to come in, square him up and attack him. But, you know, back then, we had to work so hard. It was so disciplined, and we were so fit. We were strong and fit. And, you know, he bought players to fitted them in the right places. You know, say round pegs in round hole squares. It sounds stupid. We were very simple tactic-wise. You had two touches in midfield. You know, my job was really to try and get 10 crosses a game. The only regret I do have is I really would have liked to have been a bit more selfish and got a few more goals. But, you know, they even put me on assist bonuses, you know, so that, yeah, you know, Wrighty and Brighty, if I had a shot, they would absolutely destroy me. No, you don't do that. You cross for us.
He broke into the England side, which was unbelievable in terms of fantastic. You were absolutely flying. But then he got injured, didn't he? Is it a big regret? And do you look back and think, I wonder what my career could have been? Because there were two bad injuries, weren't they? They were crucial. Oh,
Rob, it was a shocker. It was a shocker. I was going to the game. That game, I was gonna speak to Bari the next morning. I was going to Italy. I'd started learning Italian. And Graham Taylor was there. We were playing, I think we were playing Turkey in a European Championship qualifier. I think that the championships were in Sweden in the summer. And yeah. I swear to you, Rob, I remember driving to that game and I just thought, yes, come on. This is it. This is my time. I'm going to go to Italy. Serie A. I'm going to the European Championships. I'm feeling great. And then knee went. And I'm lying in that hospital. And they're literally saying to me, you're done. Your career's over. And I can remember just standing in the garden that night with a guy about 2 o'clock and just looking up at the stars thinking, what is going on, Rob? What is going on? And then I just got the mentality, I'm going to fight and I'm going to... And that was tough, but I got through it. I flew off to LA, West Hollywood to have the operation. I mean, Steve was brilliant. Ron were brilliant. They, you know, sent me to America. Came back, got back in England side. And then it went again. And that was devastating, Rob. I was absolutely devastated. I didn't really sort of drink in and just didn't want to train, didn't want to do anything. And one of the lifesavers was really just getting to do Sky because, you know, got the call from Sky, look, you're not doing much, come and do this. I went and covered the African Cup of Nations with Neil Duncanson, BBC.
Yeah.
Did that, it was brilliant. Like, things like that were brilliant to have something to look forward to. But I was absolutely devastated. And really coming back, I just knew, Rob, you know, little hamstrings, little things. It was just such a struggle. And that's one of the hardest bits that I've had to deal with is just knowing that it could have been so much better, but, you know, the body wasn't willing. So, it's been one of those massive, massive things. So I have to try and stop myself thinking about it too much and just, you know, life is what it is. It deals you a set of cards, you know, all those kind of things that, you know, I worked so hard to get to 36, Rob. I really did. And a lot of that was just working hard to try and keep up. And that was tough, and that's mentally draining. It's mentally draining when you just, you know, you have to train just to try and keep up and play. And then, you know, by the time I was 34, 35, you're taking anti-inflammatories just to train. And I just thought, what am I doing? And that's when, you know, I rang Andy Melvin at Sky and I said, look, if there's a contract there, I'm ready to call it a day. Because I just didn't want to keep beating myself up physically, but the worst was mentally, really. You know, you said kids were young, they're strong, quick, powerful, and I just thought I can't do it mentally anymore. It's just too much of a brain damage.
I mean, the one thing that Sky Sports did provide you with, which is arguably the greatest moment I'm sure of your life, is don't let the sun go down on me. Don't let the sun go down on me.
Although I touch myself. It's always someone else. That's it. I beat Cammy. Come on.
Hey, I beat Cammy.
You know what? I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on here because when I used to go around the grounds, you know, some of the away fans, you know, they would, or the fans would give it me. They're just a shit Chris Kamara, you know. Oh, the banter was good. But yeah, that was a highlight. 2006.
Don't let me, you can't. You can't hey,
John Aldridge.
You can't do any better than that ever.
The legend, John Aldridge, Gary Gillespie. You got Chris Kamara, Claire Tomlinson.
Alan McInally, Mullers.
Alan McInally, yeah. Oh, my God, yeah.
Tell people, we're in on here. Tell people what it was. Explain what it was. I think it's on YouTube. I think people can still see it on YouTube. Go on, explain what it was.
What, the Christmas party? It was the Y
Factor. Yeah, this is the show.
The Y Factor.
The was Y it Factor. It's like an X Factor.
Yeah, because we were like, why would we be doing this?
Why are they doing it?
It was the 2006 Christmas do, wasn't it? The Christmas
special, yeah.
The Christmas special.
Soccer Saturday, yeah. Christmas show, yeah.
Yeah, so we went down to Abbey Road Studios. Where did we go? I went in the studio, worked with the band. It was exciting. It was, you know, it's...
Look,
it's,
the bottom line for everybody's we're in on here. The bottom line is he won it easily, singing Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me. Gave it the full bifters, hammered everyone, walked off with a prize.
What was I like, Rob? What was I like?
Brilliant,
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Johnny Sal.
I've expected George Michael to come on and do a little duet with you. You know what I mean?
I know. Wow. That was, I look back at things like that. Just, priceless, brilliant. I mean, I loved my time with Jeff and the boys and you guys. It was, you know, because, I mean, I sort of grew up, well, obviously with Richard Keys and Andy Gray. Yeah. I was presenting Goals on Sunday with Anna Walker, and to be fair, that, you know, they were brilliant. They were brilliant to me because, you know, at the time they sort of said to me, "Look, if the knee doesn't work out, you've got a job here." And, you know, that was fantastic because it gave me a lot of confidence to know that you had something, you know. But I was desperate to play a game, and you know, I'm glad to have done that and just carried on. But it all goes
hey, John.
Back to the flash.
John, glory days, mate.
Glory days. Good old days. No, it's something, to be fair, it's like two careers, really, in a sense of the playing career. And then it's sort of spending 10, 12 years part of the Soccer Saturday family is, you know, that was amazing. That was good. But still, young man, you never know. Still time, Rob. Hey, still time.
Mate, for you, there's always time. Listen, John, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate it. Look forward to catching up with you soon in person as well.
Lovely. You're a superstar. Thanks, Rob. Good seeing you.
Take care, John. See you, mate.
Bye, everyone. Stay safe. Stay home. Stay safe.
Stay safe. Cheers, John.